Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
I bet you don't know what the top five most common toxins are in general practice of veterinary medicine. Do you know? You're going to learn with me, by the way, listeners. So this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to this. So joining me is a good friend of ours, wonderful colleague, Dr. Renee Schmidt. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
So to the listeners, by the way, Renee, I don't know what you're about to cover. But I'm going to be asking you some ones that I think might be common. I might be completely wrong. We'd be like, where did you go to vet school, Adam? But that's okay. But we're going to figure this out together. So to our listeners about Dr. Schmidt, she is the manager of veterinary medicine and professional services and senior veterinary toxicologist for Pet Poison Helpline Safety Call International. She has been with the organization since 2013, during which time she has had the opportunity to lead the team of veterinarians that span across the country and contribute to veterinary outreach and daily operations of Pet Poison Helpline. Dr. Schmidt graduated from Kansas State University with a BS degree in agriculture, animal science, as well as a DVM from there. While at Pet Poison Helpline, Dr. Schmidt has managed over, get a load of this, everybody, 25,000 cases involving animal poisoning and has presented on leadership and various toxins at both state, regional, national conferences. She has authored and published many peer-reviewed scientific articles, and she's currently on our editorial advisory board here at DVM 360, which we're so proud of. And some of you may have seen her already in person this summer at our Fetch Kansas City conference, where she packed the house. So, well, it's a very popular thing. Before we get into it, though, Dr. Schmidt, what do you find that too? It's a very popular, I guess it's a good thing or a bad thing in this profession, but we just really want to know, as veterinary professionals, do you see it on your end as well? It's a popular area.
Yeah, for sure. I think that toxicology in general isn't talked about very much in schools anymore, in colleges, because the curriculum is so rigorous. They are starting to cut a lot of toxicology programs. And so people are really kind of hungry, or so to speak, or thirsty for more toxicology knowledge when they're out in general practice, emergency practice, or even specialty work.
Cool. Interesting. Yep. All right. So here we go. So we're going to do the top five most common, you know, poisons that pets ingest. So I'm going to go with one, and then I don't know what number it is, but I'm going to go with, let's go with chocolate. I would say chocolate or theobromine.
Yeah, chocolate, you for sure got the number one. And by far, we do these top, we list them, we rank them every single year, and chocolate is always the number one.
Okay.
And it is by far probably 10 times more calls than any other, even the number two call, that it still beats it by a good 10 times.
Wow, okay. So tell us a little bit about a chocolate toxicity.
Yeah. So with chocolate is just chocolate until it isn't. So it really depends on the type of chocolate. So the darker the chocolate, the less sweet the chocolate is, then that contains more theobromine, which is really the toxin of concern with chocolate. There's definitely caffeine in chocolate as well, but it's lower amounts. And so we really focus on theobromine. And the a big concern really depends on also the weight of the animal. And so depending on how much they get into, if they were to get into 8 ounces of Baker's chocolate, it'd be much more detrimental to them than 8 ounces of Hershey Kisses. And so we really have to look at which type of chocolate it is, the amount of dark chocolate, is it certain cacao, is it 60% cacao or 80% cacao, makes a big difference into the whole scheme of how severe their signs may be.
And what if they got into the chocolate a day ago and you just happen to realize, oh, my dog's not acting right, doc. I think I have the whole bag here. You know, how important, obviously we know time is of the essence, but how does that alter the treatment outcome?
So depending on how clinical they are, if they're asymptomatic at 24 hours out, not going to be a big issue. Usually we're going to see some type of clinical sign within the first 2 or 3 hours after the ingestion, with the most significant signs being around 6 hours or so after the ingestion. Chocolate's pretty slowly absorbed in the GI tract. And so if they're asymptomatic by 24 hours out, we're going to be in good shape. if they are symptomatic at 24 hours out, depending on the amount that they have ingested, we've actually gotten chocolate out even from the stomach, even 24 plus hours after the ingestion.
Wow. So inducing vomiting and then maybe activated charcoal as well, would you recommend?
Yeah, you bet. Usually if we catch these initially, we'll induce vomiting and we try to decontaminate as much as we can in that way. Okay. Chocolate, fortunately, again, because it likes to sit in the stomach for a while, we can usually get a pretty good return. Typically, we'll say about 50 to 65% of those stomach contents we can get back with inducing vomiting within the first few hours. And then activated charcoal, typically one dose, depending on where they're at after everything's been reassessed after they've induced vomiting.
Okay, great. All right, so that was number one. So listeners, I'm going to give you a little moment to pause to guess what you think, what the second, I don't know, I'm going to try to do with the second most common one, Dr. Schmidt. And I'm going to go with, this might be a very umbrella category, but I'm going to say prescription medication. Is it, am I close?
No. Too broad. You know, actually prescription medications in that broad category are probably one of the most common calls that we receive because it is so vast.
Right.
But you got to narrow this down.
Now the time. All right. Am I close in the top five? Yeah. Okay. So let's skip that one. So screw that one. So wait, let's go to xylitol then. I'll go with gum.
Okay. You're pretty close. It's number three.
Oh, that okay.
Is number three. Yep. And it's a really common one. Probably we would get more calls on them if there was a more readily available exposure. Even though gum is all around, a lot of people don't chew sugar-free gum containing xylitol. So do you want to talk about xylitol? Or you want to go try
and talk about xylitol. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So xylitol, what's really interesting about xylitol is all the awesome effects that xylitol has on humans and in other areas other than dogs. So the dogs really are the ones that are the most sensitive species. And we can see xylitol toxicity with rabbits, cattle, some horses a little bit. Fortunately, we don't think that cats have a concern. There was a study that was sent out, I think it was in 2017 now, where they actually gave xylitol differing amounts to cats, and they didn't have any issues with hypoglycemia. And so we never really thought xylitol was a big concern with cats, but we weren't really sure. And this particular paper really kind of helped solidify that a little bit. So it's really interesting in that dogs, xylitol gets absorbed really rapidly. And so it causes a high insulin surge. And that's what causes the hypoglycemia to occur. In humans, however, it's not very well absorbed and it takes a longer amount of time, which is likely why xylitol doesn't really have a concern in humans as it does in animals. Huh. It's also used, you can find it, you know, we talk about it in gum and in candies, but it can be in peanut butter, weight loss products, protein supplements. It has a great glycemic index. So it's about the potency of sweetness as regular sugar is, but it actually is helpful for diabetics because of that glycemic index. Mm. And it also can be found in skin gels and deodorants and things that you would not normally think need to have some type of flavoring to them. Oh. And it's because of their humectant effect. So they retain moisture and then they also prevent protein breakdown. And so they help prevent any type of fermentation of it.
Wow. You know, it's a good reminder. You talked about peanut butter. I know we were talking about this on my TikTok live stream with pet owners that certain peanut butters have that. So they are looking at the back of those bottles to make sure it doesn't have it if they're giving that as a treat to their pet. So thank you for that.
Yeah, for sure. And so far, we have not found it in mainstream peanut butters. It's usually more of those, what I call the boutique-y brands, some that you'll find more in the Whole Foods sections or organic food sections. But things change on a daily basis, and so it can always be there.
Sure.
The other comment I would make about xylitol, places to find xylitol, would be in chewable tablets, gummies, vitamin supplements, those types of things. Anything that you can think of that really requires some sweetness, and something that also might help increase shelf life a little bit more. So xylitol is a great ingredient for a lot of our chewable gummy supplements.
Okay. Another great reminder too. Wow. Fantastic. Okay. All right. So we did xylitol at number three. So we're missing 2, 4, and 5. I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to go with antifreeze toxicity. I don't know if am I in the top 5?
No, you're not even in probably the top 20.
Okay. That's when you know you're old. Okay. So let's not do any. Is there a plant involved a number five in top 5? No,
kind of.
All right. Well, I'm going to say
a portion of it
is marijuana or hemp part of it.
You know, marijuana for the first time this year made it into the top 10, but it is not in the top 5. It came in at a strong number 8 number 8. It hadn't even been in the top 10 in years past.
Wow. Okay. So it's not a plant. I gotta be missing something. Not a medication. Help me out.
It's kind of a plant. It's the fruit of a plant.
The fruit of a plant. Why am I blanking out?
Grapes. Grapes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Grapes and raisins. Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So grapes and raisins are number 2, and they're a common one. You're always a big concern because we can, people sometimes give their animals their medications in grapes and they don't typically have a problem, but grapes and raisins, a lot of times
people do that. They actually put,
they'll slide it right in there and give it to them. They'll say, I've done it for years, every day for years. And some dogs just don't ever have an issue with it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So we kind of think that every dog can usually tolerate one grape or one raisin. Most of them can. We don't know what the specific toxic dose is. There's some thoughts that the toxic component might be tartaric acid, but it really hasn't been proven at this point. It's still somewhat of a theory. And even with that in mind, if it does come out to be that's what it is, we don't know what the amount specifically of tartaric acid is in each grape or raisin, because we all know the sizes vary and the different varieties that are there can really have a different amount. So I'm not sure that it's going to end up being able to really change the way we manage cases and we approach them very much.
All right. So that's a good one. So I'm laughing because I made a TikTok video of that. I did the top 5 most common toxicities, and grapes and raisins was in there in my top 5 because I go through the supermarket and show everybody. So in the words of Celine Dion, now it's all coming back to me. I know what number 4 or 5 has to be. You got to have a rodenticide in there.
We do have a rodenticide in there. You bet.
Okay.
So bromethalin made it to number 5.
Okay.
Anticoagulants were 6, and vitamin D3, cholecalciferol was 7.
Wow.
So they were all really close to one another, but bromethalin has really topped those rodenticides for the last 3 or 4 years now.
Okay. Wow. So that's quite a few in that top 10 right there. My goodness. Okay. And now I'm missing the 4th one then, right?
You're missing the 4th one. You got it.
Give me a clue.
It is in the human medication section over the counter.
I'm going to say aspirin.
Close. Ibuprofen.
Ibuprofen. Okay.
Yeah. Ibuprofen is number 4, and it's always been within kind of the top 5 for several years. Such a common product. A lot of people will give ibuprofen to their pets because their pet is limping, and then they realize that they shouldn't have done it. And so we'll get calls from that, as well as then just the animal getting into their bottle of ibuprofen.
Right. And talk to me a little bit more about some of the other common toxicities that you see, like household cleaners, or what about like the flea and tick preventions, like any of those kinds of things that you see?
Yeah, you know, we certainly do get plenty of calls on those. They don't make it into the top 15 or really even 20 percentage of calls that we get. Usually we're going to get more plant calls. So lilies is a big one. Mm-hmm. And food, onions, garlic, mushrooms out in the yard, having animals ingesting mushrooms. And then when we think about other human medications, so acetaminophen, so Tylenol type products, and then also amphetamines. So some of the psychiatric pharmaceuticals, those make it into the top kind of 20-ish list of things. The only dog or pet specific product that's actually in this list is carprofen. So surprisingly, carprofen makes it into the top 10 this year. Was the first year it made it into that. Yeah. And it surprised me because I'm not really sure why carprofen went up the ranks this past year, but unless it's just more people are home and they're noticing their animals are more, you know, have been more, have more arthritis issues, more arthritic right. or something. They're home more and to notice it more. And so maybe there's more pets that are on it. I'm not sure what the reasoning is.
Right. And you mentioned a little bit about marijuana. Has that, are you seeing an uptake in calls about that? Or is it more normalizing a little bit now that it's legalized in more parts of the country? Like, what does that look like on your end?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot more calls on marijuana and THC products, just because they're more readily available. As mm-hmm. you said, you know, more and more states are legalizing either medical or recreational use of it. And so we're seeing more calls with them. Dogs are really sensitive to marijuana, more so than a human would be. And so even a small amount, there's not a great quote toxic dose of marijuana, because there's a lot of individual variability with each animal, but we can see signs at really, you know, small ingestions. And so we're likely getting a lot more calls, one, because they're more readily available in the homes, and also maybe because they are more legalized and people feel a little bit more comfortable consulting and asking for help.
Wonderful. Great information. My goodness. My gosh, listeners, if this isn't the most digestible podcast where you can learn, just I just felt like I just got 10 hours of CE in 20 minutes. So thank you. Thank you so much. Dr. Schmidt, where can we learn more about Pet Poison Helpline?
Yeah, so come and find us at www.petpoisonhelpline.com. We are also on LinkedIn and Instagram. We have a lot of different opportunities as far as educational resources for you, any veterinary professional, and for your clinics. We have webinars as well for continuing education on toxicology for anyone who would like to learn more.
I think I have about 10,000 of your magnets, because like, we have them like in the exam rooms, we have them on the refrigerators, you know what I mean?
So yeah, just like for one of those sure. things.
You need them near the phone at all times. And it's great to leverage the technicians and the receptions to call that number too. So it's really great resource. Your whole team has been incredibly instrumental with that. So thank you for what you do.
Yeah, well, thank you. And one of the big things that's so important to us is to be a partnership with clinics and the veterinary professionals and to help guide them. I know when I was in practice for 13 years before joining Pet Poison Helpline, and I would see toxins every once in a while. And so if you don't see an amphetamine case, but once every 2 years, you probably don't know how to treat it very well. And so with us, you know, taking calls over the entire North America, we're able to see these on a daily basis and really get a large database together in order to help the veterinary professionals treat these guys in the clinic.
Yeah, super helpful. Excellent. Dr. Renee Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks for all you do. It's good to chat with you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome. And thanks to our listeners. Don't forget to rate this podcast. You got to give this one a really good Uber rating, my friends. This is a good one. And thank you for all you do. Please stay safe out there. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.